Dane, I hope before long that picture will make sense to you. Tomorrow is Labor Day. It's somewhat of an oxymoron to call it Labor Day, isn't it? We work all year, finally we get one day off from our normal jobs, and they call it Labor Day. Labor Day has various symbols and meanings associated with it today that really aren't associated with our jobs. Labor Day has come to mean the end of summer. It's the last holiday of summer. For most people, it means back to school time. For some, it means the start of another football season. Originally, Labor Day was intended to honor workers, those who labor all year long, to give them one day break from their normal jobs, and in this way to honor them. I remember when I was a teenager, one Labor Day, my father gave me some work to do. I reminded Dad that this is Labor Day. This is a holiday. We're not supposed to work today. Dad reminded me that they call it Labor Day for a good reason. Now go get to work. Dad won that one. Perhaps the most common human experience is to work. All able-bodied human beings all over the world throughout all of time have worked. Generally speaking, everybody works. Regardless of age or gender or race or class or nationality or economic or social standing, everybody has some work to do. I've noticed that when a woman brings a child into this world, the intense pain and agony that she goes through, we call labor. You got it. And I'm not sure why. Maybe some of you ladies could enlighten me on this. Is it because of the excruciatingly hard work that you go through to bring life into the world? Or is it because when a child is born, a mother's work is never done? Maybe it's a combination of both of those. If work is the most common human experience, it is almost as common for people to find their jobs to be a drudgery, something they really rather would not be doing. I heard a statistic this past week that in America, almost 90% of people hate their jobs. I'm sure it doesn't include any of us. I thought that was a great irony. People from all over the world want to come here to America to work, and yet most Americans say they hate their job. They don't find their work fulfilling or enjoyable anymore. We have slogans that go with us to remind us of how much we don't like our jobs. Maybe you've heard some of these. TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. How about this one? I owe, so off to work I go. I found one when I was younger that I kind of resonated with. Work fascinates me. I could sit and watch it for hours. Something is wrong. God intends people to work. And I don't think that God intends for people to, I don't think God intends for work to be degrading and dehumanizing and an endless drudgery. The Bible tells us that God works. In Genesis chapter 2, this morning in Sunday school, we looked at the first chapter. And now immediately into the second chapter of Genesis, the second verse, by the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing. So on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. By the time we get to the end of the Bible, in Revelation, those beautiful worship chapters in Revelation 4 and 5, God is worshipped constantly, night and day, for His work of creation and for His work of redemption. God works. And as soon as God created human beings, God gave human beings' work to do. In this same chapter of Genesis, where we read that God worked, verse 15, just a few verses later, it says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it, to work, and to care for it." Now that seems to me to be just about the perfect job, tending paradise. That's a job I could apply for. But unfortunately, Adam and Eve messed it up, and that job doesn't exist anymore. After the fall, after Adam and Eve sinned, their work changed. We read in the next chapter, Genesis 3, beginning at verse 16, God said to the woman, "I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain you will give birth to children." And to Adam, God said, "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil or work you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground." God intends people to work. And I think after the fall, work became more like work, more like we understand it today. And yet I don't think that God means for work to be degrading. How can we keep from falling into this trap of hating our work and hating our jobs? How can we keep from falling into the trap of thinking that work is a curse and something that we shouldn't have to do and that it's a drudgery? I want to look this morning at some biblical principles or biblical teaching about work that I think will help us, especially if we don't find our work to be meaningful anymore or fulfilling. I have 6 points, 6 biblical principles or 6 biblical teaching that I would like to lift out this morning that I think really enlighten us about God's intention for work. The first biblical teaching is that we are to do our work as if we're doing it for the Lord. And we find this in Colossians 3. Colossians 3, beginning at verse 22. And the writer here is writing to slaves. And if this is true for slaves, how much more for us? He writes, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you to win their favor, but do it with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord." Even slaves who didn't get a paycheck or didn't get much for their work were to do it out of reverence for the Lord and with sincerity of heart. Now listen to this. "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not for men. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving." I thought when we went to work, our paycheck was the reward. Not from the biblical perspective. You know, this teaches us that God will reward us for our work. The paycheck that we receive is just like the appetizer before the meal. It's like the carrot that is hung on a stick out in front of the donkey that keeps the donkey running, chasing the carrot. A paycheck is important, but the Bible tells us that God will reward us. And I have a feeling that the reward that God gives us for the work we do is far greater than any paycheck that we will receive. Since our work is really done for the Lord, if our work is really done for the Lord will reward us. If we do our work as if we're doing it for the Lord has an inheritance, a reward saved up for us. The first biblical principle is to do our work as if we're doing it for the Lord. This is one of the most awesome thoughts that I find in the New Testament, that the work that I do, even though I'm not rewarded well here for it, some of the work that we do, we don't get paid for, but we will. God will reward us. God has an inheritance saved up for those who work and do their work joyfully here. There's a second biblical principle that I want to look at this morning, and that is to see that our workplace is a sacred place. I want to look at the story that Dana read for us from Exodus 3 a little bit. For the first 40 years of Moses' life, Moses grew up in the palace in Pharaoh's home. Remember, he was adopted by one of Pharaoh's daughters. And Moses grew up in the palace. He lived a life of comfort and ease and luxury. Moses could have had a really important job, maybe a prime minister, but he could have had a government job, a job that was really easy for him to do. And now we find Moses, a long time later, out in the wilderness, tending sheep. And they weren't even his own sheep. They belonged to his father-in-law. By all appearances, Moses' career had gone in the wrong direction. We like to think, when we're young, we get a job with a company or somewhere, and we kind of move up the ranks. We climb the ladder at work. Have you ever heard that? Moses was coming down the ladder. No, Moses had fallen off the ladder. That's how low he had gotten. He couldn't get much lower. The sheep he was tending weren't even his own sheep. He had gone from the palace and from a life of promise to absolutely nothing. And one day Moses was out tending sheep, and he saw something really strange. Off in the distance, he saw a little shrub that was burning. It was on fire. And I don't know that this was strange to Moses to see that. And I'm not sure, probably it wasn't the first time that he had seen that. In the sweltering heat and the dryness of the desert, these little scrubs, when they dry out, become easy targets for lightning or any kind of a spark. Maybe even heat starts them on fire. I don't know. But probably Moses had seen these before. But as he looked, it said that later he saw that the bush wasn't burning up. I don't know if it was an hour later, maybe it was a day later, that he saw the thing was still on fire. So Moses went over closer to it to see what was going on. This really intrigued him. When he got close to it, a voice spoke to him out of this fire, out of the burning bush, and said, "Moses, Moses, take off your shoes. The place you're standing is holy ground." The Bible doesn't tell us what Moses thought, but I can only imagine he must have thought something like this. What? This barren wasteland is holy ground? It's easy for you to say, God, you don't live here. You don't tend sheep here. There's no water. There's only sand and dirt. You know, about 10 years ago, I had the wonderful, wonderful privilege of spending a semester at Jerusalem University, studying at Jerusalem University in Israel. And I had a free week. And one of the things that I did in that free week, I wanted to go down to the wilderness area where the Jews had wandered for 40 years. I wanted to see Mount Sinai, where God gave the Ten Commandments. I wasn't in the wilderness 4 hours, so I said, "I've had enough. Get me out of here. There's nothing there but rocks and dirt and sand and wind and heat." You know what wind does to snow here, if we get a lot of snow and there's a lot of wind with it. The wind does the same thing to the sand in the wilderness, in the desert. I wasn't there very long until I was wiping sand out of my eyes and sand out of my ears. Sand was in my hair and in my clothes. Everywhere there was sand. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I all of a sudden developed a great sympathy for the Israelite people who spent 40 years in that wilderness. When I was there, I had to wonder if Moses ever cursed the desert. if Moses ever cursed this barren wilderness. Moses must have thought to him, how can this place be holy? There's nothing out here but a few snakes, spiders and lizards, a few desert mice, maybe an occasional acacia tree, a few little scrubs here and there, a few blades of grass that have the courage to grow behind the shade of a rock. How can this place be holy? It was holy for one reason. God was there. And I find it really significant that God came into Moses' workplace. That's where Moses heard his calling. God came to where Moses was working and made the place sacred. A barren desert, a barren wasteland, all of a sudden became a sacred place. It was only through the eyes of faith that Moses was able to see that this is a holy place. And it's holy because God is here. You know, that wilderness really was a holy place. It was in that wilderness that the people received the Ten Commandments. They learned that God had expectations on how they were to live. God gave them the law in the wilderness. It was in the wilderness that they learned God will provide for us. God fed the people with manna in that wilderness. It was the place where the people were to learn how to be God's people. The place was a holy place. But when the people forgot to look at that through the eyes of faith, when they forgot that it's holy because God is here, they started to murmur against God and against Moses. It's only through faith that we can see holy places. Many of the places that we work are spiritual and moral deserts. But I think God can come into these places and make them a holy place. There are a lot of factories around where I live, and frequently I hear that they've come in and they've done a drug test in one department or in one company, and only half the people are left. Half the people can't pass a drug test. Our factories, our shops, our schools, our kitchens, our offices, wherever we work, can become a holy place if we recognize that God is there. And we know that God is there because God goes with us to our places of work.